Welcome to Marketing Speak, a series of interviews and monologues featuring thought leaders and industry practitioners in search engine optimization, e-commerce, and online marketing. Here's your host, Stefan Spencer, SEO expert, author, speaker, consultant, and internet entrepreneur.
In this episode, number 127, you're going to learn how marketing strategy and business investing dovetail and can support each other in interesting and lucrative ways. Our guest today is Brad Costanzo. He's an entrepreneur, marketing strategist, and business investor who has started and exited multiple companies and is seeking acquiring new businesses currently. He's the founder of Costanzo Marketing Group, Costanzo Capital, and also the host of the podcast Bacon Wrap Business. Brad, it's great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. So we met through Neil Strauss, through his secret society, which isn't all that secret since it has a website.
Yeah, it's not that secret if it's got a website. I don't know. Does Skull and Bones have a website?
I don't know. I haven't Googled it.
You're not going to.
Yeah. So let's talk about the whole web strategy sort of thing, because I know you spoke at the event that we met at the Neil Strauss intensive. So
yeah,
what was it that you spoke about? And yeah, let's just start there.
Cool. So if I remember right, man, you're taking me back. I think this is like a year and a half ago, if I'm not mistaken. But one of the things when we were talking, we were speaking to a lot of guys who, some of them were just getting started being entrepreneurs, some were corporate. So this was not necessarily all online entrepreneurs especially. So I kept it a little bit broad. And one of the very first things I talked about is really understanding who your market is, how you serve them. And it doesn't matter if you're selling physical products, if you're selling services, if you're selling really anything. I think a lot of people jump into marketing without giving or paying a lot of attention to who they're serving and the results they get from working with that person. And once more, this could be as a consultant, this could be a physical product. Like, why does the person buy from you and what do they really, really want? And maybe like, how do you peel that onion back and get down to the layers? Like, what are you really providing? So for instance, one of my clients is in the conceal carry space. They got a physical product there, you know, the gun holsters basically. And for the longest time, he was like, well, I just sell gun holsters for people who need someplace to put their gun in their waistband. And as we started to go down this path and really start to understand and how to talk to the clients, both on the website and in the email newsletters and everything else, we started focusing much more on talking about the peace of mind that having a good piece of equipment for conceal and carry covers and personal protection and the safety. We just tried to go out one level or zoom in or zoom out, however you want to think about it, and think about what is the person really trying to accomplish when they're buying this product, right? And so this is harder to do with products. It's way easier to do when you're selling a service to somebody where they get a result. But I think it's something that a lot of people skip over in order to just get the cash. Like, hey, I just want to sell some stuff. So I do know I talked a lot about that. And then one of the other big things that I've done is I consider this my little formula for leverage, because I've always been the kind of guy who looks for shortcuts and I want to get the maximum out of the minimum input. And one of the biggest shortcuts I've found is by asking, I guess, 3.5 questions. I know I mentioned this in the speech, which was whenever I'm trying to accomplish something, whenever I'm trying to grow my business or a client's or a partner's business, and I'm trying to figure out a roadblock, I stop and I just ask myself, all right, who else has what I need? Number one. And these are very simple questions, but man, they can really unlock a plethora of opportunities. But who else has what I need? Well, first of all, I have to know what I need. And I get really granular on this. So maybe I need traffic. Maybe I need, you know, an eyeballs and exposure and PR. Maybe I need product. Maybe I've got traffic and I've got a big newsletter or a customer list of people who've bought one thing, but I need more stuff to sell them. Maybe I need expertise in a certain area. And I just make a big personal inventory of all those things I need. And now I ask another who else question. I said, who else needs what I have? And by taking inventory of your assets, you'd be really surprised at how many opportunities you really do have. And what we have is a lot deeper than, well, I've got an email list or I've got a product. We've got relationships. We've got skill sets. We've either got capital or we know people who've got them. We've got connections. We've got distribution channels. There's a lot of things we have. And this is, by the way, a really fun exercise to do if people haven't really sat down to do it, because it makes you just realize that, wow, there's a lot more that I can do here. So who else has what I need? Who else needs what I have? Then I ask a really big question, which is what if? And I look for ways that I can connect these dots. And I say, okay, I've got a big list in this market. Who else needs that? Well, what if we did, okay, just a simple affiliate deal or a joint venture? Or what if I could get rights to one of their assets? What if I could buy their company? What if I could structure a deal often referred to as triangulation, where I help party A get what they need from party B, and then party B helps me get what I need? So it's like a three-way split. But this is where I have a lot of fun just brainstorming. I've got assets and I need something else. What if we found a more creative way to do this or to skin this cat? And then the last part is why not? Right. So there's a lot of things we could do in business and in life. There's not necessarily as many things we should do. So I have to ask myself, are there any conflicts of interest? Are there any resource shortfalls? Or is there any reason that this wouldn't work? And if there are reasons it wouldn't work, I can kind of go back to the what if category. And I say, okay, well, how can I make this work? So if I remember right, those are two of the big themes in my, I think, like 1 hour speech at Neil's, but they've served me really well in business, in growing my own, in working with clients and partners, and then recently in some of the acquisitions I've been doing.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the acquisitions in just a minute. But one thing that came to my mind when you were describing your client who sells gun holsters and the concealed carry area, that it reminded me of the reason why the railroads went out of business, all these major companies back.
Oh, I know where you're going. I love this.
Yeah. You know, so what was it? 100 and whatever years ago. And then trucks came out and started taking over the roads. The railroads didn't realize they were not in the railroad business. They were in the transportation business. And so they got caught by surprise when the trucking industry decimated the railroad business.
What was I just reading that talked exactly about this? Oh, man. So when I said I knew where you're going, because I read a book just, I think, in the past few months where it used that as an exact example. And it was so spot on, because you're right. They got they got run over by the railroad because they were hanging on to their train business and everybody else came and ate their lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a really good documentary series. I think it might be available on Netflix about these famous industrialists.
Oh, The Men Who Built America?
Yes.
That's my favorite docuseries. It is so engaging. I was blown away by it. I've seen it, the whole thing, twice.
Yep. Yeah, I loved it too. So I'll include a link in the show notes to this great docuseries. I loved it. So we have the questions to ask, and you ask those questions whether you're deciding whether to build a website from scratch, whether to acquire a website, whether to do a revamp or site redesign for a client or for yourself, right? For pretty much any major project, you'll ask those questions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's where I start. And it's so elementary, but it's who else has what I need? Who else needs what I have? What if, and there is just dot, dot, dot after that. Sit down and have fun, because this is where you find leverage points. You know, this is where you find the ability to do what's called leapfrog theory. And I don't, have you ever heard of leapfrog theory by Robert Ringer?
No, I haven't.
Okay, cool. So Robert wrote a, I think it was New York Times bestselling book, but it was an absolute bestseller called Winning Through Intimidation back in, I want to say the late 70s or early 80s. Now the title is misleading because it makes it sound like how to win by using intimidation. But really what he was talking about is how there is so many things out there to intimidate us in life or in business, et cetera, that I'm going to show you how to win through it, almost like winning despite intimidation. And in it, he details the concept of leapfrog theory, which if I pull this up here, I'm on my computer, I'll read just one little clip from it because I try to live my life by it, where he says, no one has an obligation, moral, legal, or otherwise, to work his way up through the ranks. Every person possesses an inalienable right to make a unilateral decision to redirect his career and begin operating at a higher level anytime that he alone believes he's ready. He goes on to say that it is up to you to realize that if you have the skills and knowledge to be at the top of your game, it's frustrating to know that deep down inside you're capable of so much more, but you're busy fighting these little day-to-day battles because you kind of think you have to. You're like, oh, I've got to start a business from scratch. I've got to do all this the hard way. And I've got to figure it out myself before I can outsource it. And I got to start outsourcing it before I can hire employees to do it. And I got to build this whole business. And with leapfrog theory, he says at any time you decide, you can start operating at a much higher level in personal life and business or whatever, but you just have to bring your A game to it. So the way I look at that is saying, okay, if I want to do big things, what if I don't have to build it all myself? What if I don't have to do absolutely everything? And what if there's somebody out there who is desperately in need of what I've got? And by the way, what I've got might just be the simple desire to do the work, because there's a lot of people out there who don't want to do the work. But if they've got an asset that I can piggyback off of and use that to leapfrog over some of the hurdles, then life just got easier potentially for both of us. And this is kind of what brought me around to this mindset of going out and partnering with or acquiring a business that has already kind of done all the hard stuff, but they're not doing the necessary stuff. And I'm willing to do that. Maybe just some of it I'm willing to do, maybe some of it I know how to do and they don't. But that allows me to, instead of, if I need shelter, right? If I need shelter, I don't go to Home Depot and buy 2x4s and hammers and nails and then build a house myself. I'm going to go arrange financing. I'm going to go buy a house that's already been built that I want to live in. It's like, why is it as entrepreneurs, we think we have to build our cash flow from scratch? We can go out there and arrange to buy that cash flow, to buy that business, to do something that still makes sense. By the way, you don't need to have, $1 million in cash to buy a $1 million business, not by any stretch. But I mean, I don't want to get too far off the topic here and onto a soapbox, but this is the kind of epiphanies that I had when I started thinking more like an owner of businesses as opposed to just a business owner.
Yeah. So an owner versus an operator.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've acquired some businesses. Are you acquiring entire businesses or are you just acquiring websites?
It depends. So one recent one was a website. I acquired all the assets of it. It's an authority site and I got the URL. I got the website. I got the server. I got the email list. I got the courses. I got all the associated affiliate links that go along with it. And there's just a lot of opportunity there to add value to it and grow it and then ideally sell it. So in that, the businesses I am acquiring are website-based businesses, it's kind of like one and the same. And at the same time, I don't always acquire 100%. Sometimes I come in for a smaller percentage, like anywhere from 20 to 80% of the business. Sometimes I bring cash. Sometimes I just bring other assets in lieu of cash, such as access to distribution that they wouldn't get without me. Sometimes it's sweat equity. You name it, there's a different way to do it, but no two deals are almost ever the same.
And so how do you find these deals? Are you looking on Flippa or like?
No, I'm really not. By the time they've made it to a website broker, I probably don't want the deal. I would be lying if I said, I've got this awesome magical source of where to find these companies, because I don't. A lot of it is networking and just getting out there and letting people know that, listen, I am in the market to acquire businesses. Typically authority sites or e-commerce businesses are my, and sometimes SaaS are my three little primary criteria there and an opportunity for me to add value. I've got a podcast of my own, obviously. One of my opportunities came from one of my podcast listeners. So as I said, by the time it's actually already on the market and the person is like wanting to sell and they've put it out there for an auction, I feel as though the deal is probably not the one that I want to do necessarily, because I don't want to get into a bidding war with people, with rare exceptions. But the hardest part about that entire business is simply prospective deal flow and finding the right people to talk to.
Right, right. So that makes sense that you would want to find the opportunity before they've listed it anywhere, before they've had a chance to shop it around, and then you can get the best price because there's no competitor that you're having to worry about outbidding.
Right, exactly. And it's ultimately, I'm never buying a business. I'm buying a situation. I'm solving a problem for the owner of those assets, right? So it may be that they've plateaued, they're stuck and they don't know what else to do, that they're sick of it and they want to go do something else because they've got something else. It may be that they are hemorrhaging cash and they don't know how to turn it around. It's the reverse of a plateau, right? Like things are falling and revenues are going out the door. Maybe they're losing SEO rank. Maybe they're they got slapped by Facebook or something of that nature, and it's a problem they don't know how to fix. Well, if I do, and I know how to solve that problem, and by solving that problem, it'll add a tremendous amount of value that I can see, then that's what I'm buying. I'm buying the situation. Like, I will never go in and I don't want to say never, but I'm never going to go into a company that's humming along and doing really well and buy that. I don't want that because that's, I mean, number one, I'm not going to get a price that's going to incentivize me to do it because that person's not in a situation where they are looking to get out and to relieve some of the pain that they're in. So as I said, I'm always looking for situations, and there's a lot of people out there in situations where they're just either burned out or they don't know what next steps to take. And I pride myself in being, as a business strategist with an emphasis in marketing, I know a lot of the things that need to happen in order to get a business, you know, rocking and rolling again, utilizing my network, my connections, my ideas. But I think that's an important point, that you're almost never buying the business. You're buying the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you're buying a situation where they're in a bind, essentially, like I think of the signs, the homemade signs on the street corners that say, "We'll buy your house for cash," right?
You know, it's the exact same. It is the exact same. They're not buying a house. There's a million houses out there for sale. Just go to the MLS and give full price. No, real estate investors are buying somebody who needs to sell their house for one reason or another. And that's where the margin is made.
Yeah, it's like distressed inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what Robert Allen, the famous real estate investor, would call a don't wanter.
Yeah, absolutely.
They just don't want it. They need to get rid of it. And you need to understand what the seller's motivation is. Why do they want to get rid of this house so badly? Are they going through a divorce? Is their spouse ill and their medical expenses? Is the person getting older and they can't manage the property anymore? What is that situation and the motivation behind it? And then making the problem go away, and sometimes being creative with that problem solving rather than just, here, I'll throw some money at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't always want to buy 100% or 80% of the company. Sometimes I'm very happy to take a minority share where the owner now gets a slightly smaller piece of a potentially much bigger pie. Because if I know that I've got a couple of levers that I can pull in order to put some real gas on that fire,
mm-hmm.
This is why I kind of moved away from straight up consulting, because what would happen, I would pour the gas on the fire and the client would, you know, make 2-3x, you know, what they were doing. And they would sometimes make hundreds of thousands, if not seven figures, from some small effort of my own. And here I was getting paid, you know, I don't know, $10,000-$20,000 in fees, and they made seven figures. Well, instead of that, oftentimes I would tie those results to my efforts so that we could both make money going forward. I like to be incentivized for the performance, and that way we both have a reason to go together. But yeah, oftentimes there's businesses who are just kind of stuck, but they don't want to give up total control and ownership. And I don't always have to do that. But if I can solve problems doing what I do best, which is really understanding all of those various levers that can be pulled, right? And it's like, I know that there's more than one way to skin a cat. I'm not an SEO expert, but I know the basics of what has to happen with SEO. Facebook ads, I can buy them, but I hire people to do that. Conversion rate optimization, same thing. I know what would make a website convert well and not, but I'm not going to get my hands dirty inside Shopify and do all that other stuff. But I know where to go to get those things done. So
right. If only you knew where there was a really good SEO expert. Right?
Well, exactly. I mean, if you find one someday, let me know.
Right. When you're talking about the MLS, how to find these don't wanters, essentially the situations where it's distressed inventory, the website asset, it reminded me of this story. I learned this from a real estate investing seminar, where one of the best ways to find these don't wanters is from the newspaper, looking at the rentals.
Mm-hmm.
Which rental properties still keep showing up week after week, month after month in the paper? So they're not moving. The rental's still available. Clearly, that's not good for the owner of the property. They can't get any tenants. So maybe they're starting to feel the pain of that. And then you call them up and say, "Look, I saw your ad in the paper. I'm not interested in renting, but it looks to me like you're having a hard time finding renters. So would you like me to take it off your hands and I'll solve that problem myself?"
Mm-hmm.
You won't have to deal with it any longer. And by the time they've had weeks and weeks or months even of an empty property, they might feel like, okay, that's something I might consider.
You're absolutely right. And you know, in some of these cases, you can get really super duper creative. So this is a hypothetical, but if you go and get, well, let me back up. Let me preface this with one of my favorite pieces of advice from marketing guru Jay Abraham, where he said, if you took away all of my memory of all the best strategic tactics, marketing tactics out there, and you just left me with the ability to do one thing, I would want you to leave me with the ability to know how to get the rights to an asset and then decide what to do with it later. And there's so much power in that statement. How do I get the rights to an asset and then decide what I want to do with it later? So for instance, this is not something I've necessarily done yet, but it illustrates the point perfectly. If I can go get access to, we'll use the gun holster business, okay? Because I just brought that up. If I can go get access to other businesses who've got big email lists, who have got big social followings, et cetera, if I can build a relationship with them in one way or another, and sometimes I just pay for it, right? So sometimes, you know, what would you rank your list for? Or how could I do them a favor? Or how could I just get the rights to do something with that asset? Maybe I negotiate a deal up front and I get it in writing that says, okay, you'll rent me your list. Normally you charge $5,000, but you're willing to do a test for $1,000. I'm making this up as I go. But I go around to a whole bunch of people, and now all of a sudden I've just built myself access to, let's say, a million person database with three different companies. So early on, I go make sure that I secure the access to those assets. And then that now gives me the ability, if I'm working with a client, a partner, or a potential acquisition in a certain market, I know that I've got this tool in my back pocket that I can then go and turn traffic on and make something happen. But it's almost like that book, Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. I think Harvey McKay wrote that, is how do I go create access to the assets that I need? And then once I have that access, reverse engineer it and find out what I want to do with it. And that actually dovetails really well into something I talk a lot about on my podcast, because these two principles, I think, are the two hinges that open up the door to opportunity, which are access and influence. And access and influence are very simple words, and a lot of people think of them as just, who do you know and how much do people like you, right? But it goes so much deeper than that. Because if you think about what access really means, it's just you have the right to access something. You may not own it, you can access it. Uber is a perfect example. Airbnb is a perfect example. These are companies that have given us the ability to access a car without owning one, access a hotel without, or you know, a place to stay without paying for one. But also you can access capital if you don't have it by raising money. And there's now a million ways to raise money, from Reg A crowdfunding deals to Kickstarter to doing an initial coin offering. And I mean, you name it, you can get access to other people's capital. You can get access to other people's knowledge and skills. I mean, hire a mentor or a coach, join a mastermind, and all of a sudden you've got access to some really brilliant people, even if you're starting from scratch. So this whole concept of, I don't have to own it if I can access it, is super, super critical. But then the other side of this equation is influence. And influence can be interpersonal influence, like you and me, like I influence you to invite me on your show, or I influence my podcast listeners to think of me as an authority on a subject, or I have somebody who owes me a favor. Right? There's a lot of different ways to wield influence and to build influence. And what's really cool is that the more access you get to various resources, and especially people, the more influential you become. And the more influential you become, the more access you get. And the more, and then, right? And it just goes up and up and up the ladder. So I've been, this is why I started my podcast, is so that I could get access to really brilliant people and access, listen, and, you know, build influence with my listeners, so that I could access to bigger and better people, so I could have more influence. And those are the kind of things that create ridiculous opportunities when you realize, hey, I don't have to own it if I can access it. And influence just simply means getting somebody else to act on something you want them to do. So I've really explored this topic a lot in my personal life, on my podcast, and in a lot of areas. And I try to keep it forefront of my mind when I'm trying to solve a problem.
So essentially, not having to own it if you have access to it, couldn't that mean perhaps leasing a website with the option to buy it if it works out?
100%.
Okay. Is that something that you normally do?
It's something that I recently did.
Oh, nice. Tell us more.
Yeah. So one of my one of the things I did was one of the companies I was looking to buy was an e-com business. And we went into due diligence and I went to purchase them, but there were some things, some potential red flags that I just didn't know. There's too much risk in a couple of these aspects that I couldn't quite control. And I wouldn't know what would happen until I bought it and took control of it. Right. So then now I was like, well, I don't really want to come with, you know, I was going to have to come with six figures down. I was going to own or finance like 90% of the business, but still I was going to have to write a check for six figures, whether that was from my bank account or borrowed money. And that wasn't a risk I was quite willing to take. So instead of purchasing it or just letting it go, there was the middle option, which is I took a 6-month option to buy the business. So I locked it up. And then what that allowed me to do was create a relationship whereby, for instance, let me manage the database. You've got a couple hundred thousand people on your email list that have never, ever, ever received an email except the automated receipt. And that's either a tremendous asset or it's a dead asset, and we're not going to know, right? So I created a deal where I said, okay, I've got the option to buy the business, and then I'm going to manage the email database. I'm going to engage it and reinvigorate it, and we're going to split the proceeds from the email list 50-50, because it's found money for the owner, and he didn't really know how to do email marketing at all. But in the meantime, in the past couple months that I've been doing this, it's been working really well. So I'm getting paid cash because I've accessed this asset without owning it. I'm getting paid money for it, and it's feeding me good intelligence on whether or not this is going to be a good thing to actually exercise my option and purchase the business for. So in a very real way, I leased it, took an option on it, and I got access to it, and I started to get to do all my stuff that I would normally, a year or two ago, I would have just said, hey, let me be a consultant to you and pay me a fee. But instead, I'm figuring out how good the asset is, what the operations are like. I'm getting a real open kimono kind of viewpoint on how this business is run. And now what I'm looking to do is bring on some other potential really good e-commerce or operational experts, because I'm not an operations expert at this. And if I did buy this company, I'd be going, okay, now I have to either build a team or go out and hire people or do something else. But instead, I'm looking to partner with somebody who is, you know, really, really good at the e-com operations aspect so that I can set it all up. They can run with it. We all make money together. But I bought myself a lot of time and I removed a lot of risk by doing it like this.
That's awesome. And would you say that you would have walked away from this opportunity if it weren't for Jay Abraham's advice?
I probably would have.
Yeah.
I probably would have.
He's amazing. And I'm so grateful to have had him on my show twice.
Really? That's fantastic.
So I interviewed him. So that's a fabulous episode. We talk about preeminence and all sorts of amazing strategies that he's come up with.
He's been a big influence for me. He's been a really, really big influence. And I think a lot of like more like him probably than anybody else, because I'm looking for leverage and I'm looking for opportunities and relationships that can move the needle, quite literally because I'm lazy. I don't want to do all the work.
You're not lazy. You're strategic.
I'm strategically lazy or lazily strategic. It's one of those two, but it is. I mean, I don't like, I look at all the work that has to be done. I'm like, this seems like there's got to be an easier way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to include for you listeners here, the link to in the show notes to the Jay Abraham episode. And there's a second episode with Jay Abraham where he actually interviewed me.
Oh, nice.
On SEO. And so that I'll include both links. So let's talk a bit about pricing strategy. So mm-hmm. I've bought some sites and some domains for very small amounts of money. I've also sold websites for six figures, multiple websites. Nice. for six figures. I haven't sold any for seven.
Yet. Not yeah. yet.
But I have sold a business for seven.
Nice.
Not a separate website for more than six figures. So my cheapest price that I've acquired a website for was $500. And then the next cheapest is $650. The $500 one, I'm not going to share publicly, but I'll share publicly the $650 one. It was the domain scienceofseo.com. There wasn't really a website there. It was, there was, but it was nothing really. There was not much content there. So I wanted to acquire that site and use that for an information product and as potentially an ebook, because I have The Art of SEO. That's my book that I co-authored, and that's very well known. But I think of SEO more as a science than an art. Mm-hmm. And the copyright of the book is actually owned by our publisher, O'Reilly. So I don't have a whole lot of rights that's kind of the opposite of the J. Abraham situation, where you don't need to own it if you have access to it. Well, I kind of owned it before, and then because I contributed a lot of the content, and now I don't have any access. I mean, I have to go and ask for permission to publish a chapter for free on the website. So they gave me access to, I can publish chapter 7 as a PDF, but they had to give that to me, and it has all their O'Reilly branding on it and a whole pitch to join their Safari Books Online program at the end of it. It's not really my PDF that I can share. So I kind of have the opposite of that situation. So I wanted to have something that I owned and controlled and had access, full access to. So that was the idea behind scienceofseo.com. $650.
That's great.
So that was a pretty good deal. Here's the thing. There's nothing like SEO to grow your business. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I know this, you know this, we all know this, right? But I see so many people get stuck and spin their wheels and spin their wheels some more and get nothing done. Or they finally get something done, but it's the wrong thing and it doesn't benefit their SEO one bit. But what if there were a quick and simple system I could walk you through so that you finally get some traction? Would you be interested in that? If yes, go to marketingspeak.com/challenge for a free 5-day challenge I've made for you, because I want you to experience success with SEO. You'll learn some cool tools. You'll get into real action to jumpstart your traffic and sales using easy to implement SEO insider techniques. Again, go to marketingspeak.com/challenge to crush this. Now on to the second half of our interview with our guest. What's been your cheapest or best deal yet?
So there was an authority site that I purchased that I bought it for about one half of its annual net income. So I paid, it in essence takes me about 6 months to break even. And that was like, I think I spent like $25,000 on that one, but it made like $50,000 last year.
Nice.
So that went pretty well, but it was quite literally the situation. The owner did not really know, not know, but he didn't have the desire to continue to grow it and to let it go. But that immediate $25,000 would make a big difference in his life, because right now he needed the capital for some other stuff as opposed to waiting 6 months. And that's the time value of money kind of a thing. And there's a lot of people out there who would love to take a check right now and run. You know, I did this when I sold I had an information product business that I sold back in 2012. And I never thought in a million years that I could find somebody who wanted it. I was just going to let it die on the vine, because I had it under a pen name of mine. It was a product under my pen name, but it had my likeness all over it. And I was going to let it die. I was doing a bunch of other stuff. And I ended up talking to a website broker randomly about this. He's like, you know, I may have some buyers who might be interested in this. So we floated it out there, and I sold it to an investor group out of New Zealand, not for a lot of money. It was a 6-figure sale, but, you know, not ridiculous big money. But I was really blown away that there's somebody out there, right? One person's trash is another person's treasure.
Yes.
And I was going to let it go. I was making okay money, but I was just like, I was making bigger money elsewhere. And then the opportunity cost of even thinking about this business was taken away. But they gave me 1x net income for that. So it's great. Like, hey, some people were like, well, if you would have just waited a year, you would have gotten that money. I was like, yeah, but you don't understand. They gave me a year of my life of not having to worry about that site, of not having to think about it. They gave me time. And that's how I looked at it. And it was great. But I mean, it goes to show you that no matter what you're sitting on, there is probably somebody who could really use that asset one way or the other.
Yeah. And it can be helpful to talk to a broker, not just assume that whatever your initial thought is true, right?
Absolutely.
Quiet Light Brokerage is one example of a broker that I've heard of multiple times. People have had good success using them.
What's the name of it?
Quiet Light.
Okay, cool. I hadn't heard of them.
Yeah. So they buy and sell websites, or, you know, broker the purchase and selling of websites. I know you can list sites on like websitebroker.com or Flippa, FLIPPA.com.
Mm-hmm.
But getting an actual broker who you can ask these questions to, like, is this really worth it? Does this asset have my personal brand on it too much so that no one would want to acquire it without me?
Mm-hmm.
Those are important questions to ask, and you don't want to just take a guess at it.
Right. And the one thing about working with brokers, as I said, I've worked with brokers. I've never bought one through a broker, but I have sold one.
Right.
And I've dealt with brokers, and they can be great because a site owner, especially if you're not a really astute business person, I mean, it takes there's a decent amount of stuff that gets a business ready to sell in order for a buyer to come in and feel good about doing it. Like if you want to get the most out of your business, you're going to want to package it up nice and neat. So if somebody like me or somebody else comes to buy it, it's not going to be a big mess. We'll pay more for a really tight ship. And brokers will help you do that. They'll get all that stuff. They earn their money in getting all the organization right for the buyer. At the same time, they will also oftentimes overinflate your business because they know that everything's negotiable and everything will come down. It's like selling anything. And you have to be careful not getting your expectations raised too high, because what the broker wants, just like in a real estate transaction, they want you to sell it for the most money possible because their commission, let's say it's 10%, is tied to the sale of that as well. But oftentimes what happens is that they build up the expectations for the site owner almost to unrealistic proportions. And you have to be careful if you do go through a broker and understanding that the broker doesn't always have their finger on the pulse of exactly what the market will do, but they're really good, but you have to understand the ins and outs of that game. However, if you are selling a business or if you have decided to sell your business, starting off with a broker is probably going to be a very good way to start.
Or just contact me directly if you're a listener of my show.
Exactly.
Is that how you got that one opportunity you mentioned?
No, it's not. It was literally just one of my listeners contacted me, said, "Hey, I think you can really help my brother. He's just not doing much digital marketing on this stuff. He's had a lot of success in kind of offline channels. And I think he would be willing to talk to you about doing digital marketing help and consulting." And he says, "Do you do consulting?" And I still do consulting. So it's not like I don't do it. It's just not the huge crux of my business anymore. But I still do it because, I mean, I'm good at it. I like it. If I like the situation, I think I can add value. I don't have to buy everything out there. But so I got on the phone and we started talking. And, you know, and I did something that very few people do. And it's so crazy simple, which is just ask, "So what are your plans for this business? For instance, have you ever thought about selling it?" And a lot of people don't ask that question. I ask it of everybody, every business owner that I've kind of met who has a business that I think might be sellable, because you never know. They could be thinking, "Oh, I would love to sell it. I would love to get rid of this thing, but I didn't even think I could."
Yeah.
And that happens a lot.
Yeah. And such an important question to ask of yourself is, what's my exit strategy?
Yeah.
If you don't have one, you don't have a business.
No.
Because if there's no exit strategy, you're just self-employed, essentially.
Yeah. And now I try to only do stuff that there is an exit strategy involved. It's not in my constitution to find one business and then just say, "Oh, I want to run this forever."
Yeah.
I get bored too easily. But I also want to know I can get out of this. I'm building up the value so that I can release that value to somebody else for several times, you know, what it's worth. And I think that's important to really understand.
Yeah. Because a proper business is one that has an asset value to it.
Yes.
And if you're self-employed, you're just earning a living,
mm-hmm.
and it just happens to be through whatever, an LLC or a DBA or whatever. It's not an actual business. So that's why the exit strategy makes all the difference in the world. So I'm curious, do you have an example of where you used J. Abraham's strategy of not owning but having access to it, to like some personal situation, something outside of acquiring websites or businesses? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So this was a fun one. I did this in the book business, and this is something that it does not require a ton of expertise. Actually, almost anybody could go out there and do this, but it started off. So I was consulting with a guy who was getting really big in the health and fitness space. And he had already launched one book. He had info products and coaching and all this stuff. And, you know, he had a pretty decent sized list. Like, I don't know, 100,000, 200,000 people. I can't remember because this was years ago. But I had an idea for a book title. I don't want to say what it is. I don't want to reveal any names, but...
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. That'll become evident why in a second. But I had an idea for... I was in the gym. I had an idea for a really cool, catchy book title. And then it just stuck in my head like, this would be a really good book, but I'm a nobody. I had no public audience in the health and fitness market, but my client did. So what I decided to do, and this was my very first instinct, as opposed to the third option, which is I thought, well, what if I write this book or get it written and then have him promote it and put his face on it? So instead of like in a ghostwriting agreement, the expert would pay somebody to write the book, right? And then they relinquish their rights or they pay a royalty for doing it. I went to him and I said, hey, how would you like to have a best-selling book and not do anything? And he says, well, what's your plan? And so I'd already mapped out and outlined the book of what it would be. And I knew enough about the topic I could do this. And I said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to write this book. I'll write it in your voice and I'll make it really amazing. And we're going to put your name and your face on it. And you're going to promote it to your list. And I said, I'll pay you 30% royalties. And he said, all right, well, let's see it. If it's a good book, it's done. So I wrote that book in probably about 2 or 3 weeks. It wasn't that hard. It was a health and fitness book. I mean, it wasn't like too terribly hard to do it. And I got really inspired. So I wrote this book and then I put his face on it and his name on it. And then I kind of just created this little launch campaign, a series of like 10 emails to go out to his list and everything. So this book was number one in health and fitness on Amazon for an entire 2 weeks, I think. And it made a whole bunch of money. So this is a case of I had no name. I just had an idea, but I realized that I had access to somebody who had a big name and a big audience and credibility. He had influence. I had access to him. He had influence with book buyers. And I did, I guess it's a reverse ghostwriting agreement. And I just licensed his name and his face and I marketed it to his people. As a result, he got a best-selling book on Amazon, which even led to more visibility for him. And there was a lead capture mechanism inside the book that allowed him to grow his list. And he didn't have to do a damn thing. Right. So, and I mean, book probably sold about $100,000 worth, actually about less. I think about 80,000. And I made 70% of that.
Wow. That is really clever. I like that.
Thank you. And I did it with less work involved. So this was a friend of mine had created his wife had created this book of vegetarian recipes. And she was a nobody. It sold like 3 copies on Amazon. So I said, hey, can I get the master resale rights to this book, and I want to change some stuff in it, I'll pay you 20% of everything I make. He said, sure. So then I went to another friend of mine who has a really big health and vegetarian and wellness blog and like 300,000 people on his list. I said, how would you like to have a best-selling book and not do a thing? And he said, cool. What do you got in mind? So it took me about 1 week to create a new cover and create about like 3 or 4 pages of introduction and changed a couple, like just minor little edits. And then I took this new blog, this health blog, we'll call it healthblog.com for, confidentiality reasons, healthblog.com's ultimate vegetarian recipe collection or something like this. And I told them I'd pay them 20% of all the sales. All they had to do was promote it to their 300,000 person list. So they did that and they sold a bunch of it. And I not only have the copyright to it, it's mine, but I keep 60% of all the sales from those books simply by being the toll gate. I matched the two people together that one of them had content, one of them had an audience. They didn't know each other, but I knew them. Now I could have just said, hey, you guys should meet and do something. But instead I wanted to have control of the deal. So I put it together to where with very little work, grab your content, slap somebody else's name on it, tell that person to promote it. And we had a best-selling vegetarian recipe book on Amazon. And then they went on to use that and sell it on their site. And I still got a percentage of the sale.
Oh, that's genius. I love it.
That's one way I've done it in the past where it's not really, it didn't cost much money, just a little bit of time and a little bit of just a little creativity.
Yeah, a little moxie. Yeah. It's like just, you have to think outside the box. And it's easy to get so kind of, I don't know, into autopilot mode where you're
thinking linear, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one example that comes to mind that I just heard at the last podcast movement conference, forget which speaker it was, but he talked about reverse press kit. And I thought, wow, that is definitely outside the box.
What is that?
He would go to trade shows like CES and not being a vendor, but being a blogger, he would go to the booths of the exhibitors and hand them a press kit. It was like a press kit in reverse because he was the media site.
Mm.
So press kits are usually
people who are trying to impress the media.
So Samsung, for example, a big booth at CES, they would have a press kit that they would hand to journalists who come to their booth.
Yeah.
But what if you come to the booth, you didn't spend any money on a booth, but you came with your own press kit as a blogger or a podcaster and say, this is my press kit. I think you should be on my podcast, or you know, you should be interviewed for my blog or whatever, for my news site. Really clever. So I had all the social proof in there. I had the kind of the history and the story and
that's great.
The benefits and everything. It was really clever. So that's an example of thinking outside the box. And another way to think outside the box is just what Tony Robbins teaches, is ask a better question and you get a better answer.
Huge fan of that.
Yeah. So I first applied this when the same weekend I had heard it from him. I learned that at Unleash the Power Within, his entry-level event, which is amazing. And the first night you do the firewalk, and yeah, it was very big turning point in my life was when I did that firewalk that first night in October 2009.
Yeah.
So I hear this, ask a better question, you get a better answer. He tells a story about how he got a Rolls-Royce Corniche for free every 2 years for over two decades.
Whoa.
And so what his thought process was and how that came about, and I'm like, wow, mind blown. And so I'm thinking while he's pitching later that weekend, business mastery to all the attendees, which was $10,000. At the time, I was still going through a divorce. My previous agency was in the process of getting acquired. And so I had no ability to just go raid the coffers of my agency and get $10,000 to buy a ticket for myself to business mastery. But I really wanted to go. And I didn't have the funds personally either, because all my assets were tied up in the business. So I'm thinking, how can I get into business mastery for free? Because, you know, he taught how to ask a better question earlier in the weekend. So how can I get into this event for free? And then I realized by the end of the weekend, I had the answer and I had my free ticket. What I did is I called up a friend of mine in the industry, Chris Baggett, who was one of the founders of Exact Target. And he had another company that was called Compendium Blogware.
Okay.
So he had been trying to get me to come and train his team on SEO. And I kept saying no, because that would just go into my company coffers. I wouldn't see a dime of it. And I was just like, yeah, I don't need to do that. It just doesn't interest me. But I remembered that he kept wanting me to come and train his team in Indianapolis. So I'm like, I call him up and I say, I got a deal for you. I'll come and do that training you've been wanting me to do. You just have to buy me a ticket to Business Mastery, which is $10,000.
Nice.
So I flew to Indianapolis for a day, did my training and got a free ticket to Business Mastery, which would have cost $10,000 otherwise. Yeah. And then funny enough, I get in to speak at Business Mastery a year later.
No way.
Yeah. That was fantastic. A huge win for me. And that was about having access. And when you're talking about masterminds and things like that, I was part of Tony Robbins' Platinum Partnership. And so Tony got to know me a bit. And yeah, it's a big investment, but the payoff was really big. I got more than my money back for sure. Yeah, six-figure investment, but I got well into the six figures in direct client revenue because of speaking at Business Mastery twice. In fact, I spoke at it in 2011 and 2013. So,
oh, that's killer.
Yeah.
That's killer. Speaking of another one, you just made me think of this, and I think you may appreciate it as a fellow podcaster, because this is one of the things we're going to be doing with a couple of the businesses I've got. A lot of people will be able to use this. And this falls perfectly into who else has what I need and who else needs what I have. So as a podcaster, what is the number one thing that you want?
Listeners?
Yes, right. Exactly. Exposure to listeners, right?
Yeah.
Exposure. That's what we all want as podcasters. And there are some very big podcasters who command, like the Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan and some of the other ones who command, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in sponsorship dollars. And, you know, they're killing it. 95% of podcasters are not commanding huge sponsorship dollars, and that's fine. So most of them think, well, I've just got to keep on doing this crap for free, you know, and maybe people are buying my stuff if I'm ever going to get anything out of it. So that's not true. There's a lot of people out there who would love to have exposure, but they either don't have, like, as a product owner, maybe they don't have a huge advertising budget. They don't have that, but maybe they do have a big email list. Maybe they've got a big social following. And people don't think about bartering exposure for exposure. And let me give you an example. One of the sites I bought has about 100,000 people on its newsletter, as well as, you know, about another 100,000 or so on Facebook and social media. And we would love to get exposure from a lot of these podcasts who are out there who don't, you know, none of these podcasts are the like, hey, I get a million downloads, but they're a lot of enthusiasts in this area. And I don't want to write a check for the exposure. But what I can do, or what I'm doing, is I'm going to them and say, listen, every week we're going to do a kind of a what we're listening to thing. And if you mention our website and maybe even a special offer, basically give us a sponsorship for free in every one of yours, we'll tell our entire listenership every time you do an episode, and you know, they typically do one a week, not only are we going to post it on our social media, but we're also going to post it in our newsletter and say, here's what we're listening to. We're going to give you free eyeballs if you give us free earballs, if you would. So the people we've approached for this, it's working out really well, because as a podcaster, it doesn't take you a minute to mention a company. I don't know if you have any sponsors, but let's just say ClickFunnels, right, was a potential sponsor. Now, Russell and ClickFunnels have a huge following. And they've got a big Facebook group and pages and everything else. A for instance would be as if they went to you and said, hey, if you just mentioned that you love ClickFunnels on every one of your episodes, every time you do an episode, we'll post to our social media and we'll stick it in our newsletter of stuff we're listening to now. That's a no-brainer. Like, who wouldn't do that? Because I'm getting exposure, you're getting exposure. And it's just so brain dead simple. And it doesn't take any money. It just takes a little bit of reaching out and asking. Now, the thing that makes it work is you better have if you're trying to get the podcast sponsor to sponsor you, you need to have an audience to tell them about too. You can't be a total startup.
Right. So either way, you got to have a decent sized audience. If you're the person who's going to be blasting your social media, you need to have an audience there on social media. If you're going to do a mention in your email newsletter, you need to have a decent sized email list.
Right, exactly. Now let's take this another step. So right now what you've got is, yeah, I'm getting exposure, you're getting exposure. But what if I am just starting? What if I only have a product, but I don't have a big email list and I don't have a big money to outlay for that? So now let's get more creative, which is let's think about, okay, well, how can I access somebody who does have a big audience and a list? And how can I get them to mention your show, as opposed to me mentioning it? But now you've got like what we call triangulation. So, and I don't know, there's no easy answer, but you see where I'm going. I don't have a real concrete example here. But if you start to think laterally and outside of the box, and how can I get it, even if I don't have it, because we're all of, especially now with social media, we are 1 or 2 degrees of separation away from anything we need in this world. But you need to have influence. Like, how do I build that influence, right? So this is when I do take clients. Like, I don't have a coaching program, but I do sometimes work with clients, and I got what I call my strategic partner program, which is where I sit down with people and we map these things out. We kind of do a roadmap, and they get to tap into my brain cells about, okay, I'm really good at thinking laterally. It's actually really hard for me to think linearly and straight ahead. I'm always looking for these high leverage things. But because other people aren't, I am. And that is one of the ways I do work with people. And I love it because I get to apply my solutions to somebody else's problems. And I have just as much fun with it. It's actually easier to do it for other people than it is for me. This is also, by the way, one of the ways that it ends up leading to partnerships and potential acquisitions and different stuff.
It reminds me, I just did that same sort of triangulation last week. I had some FaceTime with Dave Asprey during Traffic and Conversion Summit. And I had Byron Katie on my other podcast on The Optimized Geek. Huge win for me. I mean, she's like an amazing, major self-help author and expert. And I mentioned to Dave, you know, would you like Katie to be on your show? And he's like, I would love to have her on, you know, the Bulletproof Radio. He would love to. He's been a big fan, followed her for years and years. And I had already checked in with Katie's team that they would want referrals to big podcasts, and they do. So just putting those two people together, mm-hmm. is a huge value add, and it's going to be a value add for everybody. Like, once you can hear Katie getting interviewed by Dave Asprey on Bulletproof Radio, who knows how many lives will be changed just from that episode. And that's a great way to create value for both parties and move those two relationships forward, my relationship with Katie's team and my relationship with the Bulletproof team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those are some of the most high leveraged activities that we can all be working on. But, you know, unfortunately, not everybody has the time and energy to be working on the highly leveraged stuff, because we're all trying to just keep the house together, right? We're trying to keep the bills paid and make sure that everything's running smoothly. So that's that's where enlisting the help of outside expertise to say, listen, I need a second opinion on what I'm doing. Could this actually be easier than I'm making it?
Yeah. And even just taking the time to do that big picture thinking yourself and scheduling it on your calendar. What Keith Cunningham refers to as his thinking chair is a place he will only sit if he's going to do big picture thinking, and he's not bringing his laptop there, he's not working on email, or he doesn't do anything other than the big picture thinking when he's sitting in that chair.
Yep. And you know, the hard part is that it's my favorite thing to do. And it is the hardest thing to do for myself. It is excruciating. And that's why I have to hire coaches and mentors and other people to be my sounding boards, because I don't know what it is, but I've got these things that if it was my clients or a friend that I was trying to solve these problems for, it would come to me in a flash. But because I'm so in it and I'm so close to it, I oftentimes can't come up with the answer for me.
You know the real reason for that?
Why is that?
You're an external. So they're internals and they're externals. I learned this from Donnie Epstein.
In NLP? Internally referenced, externally referenced? Or
Nope. Donnie Epstein is the creator of network spinal analysis and somatorespiratory integration and epi-energetics. He's amazing.
Cool.
He's a good friend of Tony Robbins. That's how I met him, was from a Platinum Partner trip. First met him in Israel, in fact, on my very first Platinum trip. And Donnie is just, he's like an alien. He's amazing. He's just, he's a wizard. He can cause your spine to go into this wave and you can see it. You're just laying on a chiropractic table on your stomach and he doesn't even touch you. He just starts directing the energy without touching you.
Oh, wow.
And then your spine goes into this wave. I've seen it time and time again. It seems outlandish and crazy and witchcraft or something, but it is incredible. And it's even better to not just witness this, but actually experience it. I've had out-of-body experiences. I've had incredible experiences where I prayed for people, blessed them, and then after 15 years of not hearing from them, they call me on my cell phone within days of doing this. Yeah, from getting an entrainment from Donnie. Anyway, so this comes from Donnie Epstein. I'm going to have him on my other podcast. He's already agreed to be on the show, on the Optimized Geek. So externals, their perspective is from the outside looking in. And internals, the perspective is the opposite. Externals have no problem working on other people's stuff. It's effortless. It's just, they get energy from it. They're just incredible at it. But working on their own stuff is very hard. It's like pushing a rock uphill.
Yeah.
Whereas internals, it's the opposite. So working on other people's stuff, painful, difficult. It's just draining, and then working on their own stuff. So that's where they get their energy. That's where things just seem to flow. I'm an external. You're an external, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So what that means is that when we're working on other people's stuff, I am just in the flow when I'm consulting and coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But if I work on my own stuff, it is painful and it never gets finished and I procrastinate it. It's just draining. So I need to look at stuff in a way that I can see it as not me. So if I look at my relationship with my wife as our relationship, then it's internal, then it's draining, and it doesn't bring me energy, and it sucks. It sucks energy. If I see her as an outside person, no problem.
That's interesting.
So my solution to you, so that you get out of this rut, is to see future Brad as a separate person.
I love that. And you know, it's funny because I've done this before where I've sat down and I've had to put myself in the, imagining that I'm sitting down with a consulting client, and I would list out all of the, I would start off as Brad. I would list out all the little issues or challenges I'm trying to overcome, the things I need to think about. And I'd go for a walk, kind of clear my head, and I would come back disassociated from those problems. They're not mine. right? They're not mine. I'm just going to help this guy, Brad, or I may even sometimes, I think in the past I've given him a name, like, I don't know, John, right? Okay, I'm helping John with this. So here's what I would tell John to do in these situations. And it's amazing how it helps by disassociating it from being me.
Yeah.
So that's, but I love that, like, work on future. Yeah. That's cool to know that I'm not broken. There's more people out there like me.
Yeah. Well, you're not broken at all. It's just, that's how you're either wired one way or the other way.
Yeah.
And neither is right or wrong. It just, it is what it is. So if you want to kind of hack the system, see future Brad as somebody different. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And one other quick distinction, and then we'll close out the show. If, let's say, you're a podcaster and you want to get leverage or value, like barter exposure for exposure, or kind of find ways to create leverage, don't just ask for people to, the guests, for example, to blast out on their social channels about your show. This one just came to me not too long ago. Ask them to put a link on their media page or their press page, interviews page, whatever they call it, to your show, because then you get SEO benefit, not just a flash in the pan from some traffic that comes through Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and then it's gone. Like, nobody looks at two-week-old tweets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And then the other is, ask your guest to email their list. Like, I had Jay Abraham send out an email just about, he actually offered it. He said that he would be happy to do this, send an email out to his entire list telling them about the episode that he was on Marketing Speak here. And that was the entire email. It wasn't, you know, one of 10 things that were being talked about in a weekly newsletter. It was just the one thing. That was so powerful.
Wow, that's amazing.
I doubled my listenership.
Yeah, I found it. It was on December 19th, 2015. I pulled it up because I'm on Jay's list.
Yeah,
I literally just found it.
That's awesome. So asking, what's the expression? You don't ask, you don't get, right?
Yep.
If you ask for it, you have massively increased the likelihood that you'll get what you're asking for. If you don't ask for it, you know, good luck. It's not going to happen. So that's pretty amazing. And yeah, with that, how do we get our listeners to get in touch with you if they want to sell you at one of their websites or if businesses, if they want to hire you as a consultant or marketing strategist?
Yeah. So obviously the people listening to this are podcast listeners. And I too have a podcast called Bacon Wrapped Business, Sizzling Hot Business Advice, guaranteed to make you fat profits. Had to throw in the some headline. But yeah, no, baconwrappedbusiness.com. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Android, and all that places. And that's a good jumping off point to just kind of get into my world. And then if, as I said, if they want to reach out to me, my personal email is askbrad@baconwrappedbusiness.com. One of the things I do, if any of the things that have resonated for people are like, I may want to sell my business, or I like the way you think laterally and I have a hard time doing that, I'm happy to give you a second opinion for free just to see if there's a way that I can help you or not, and see if there's an opportunity to brainstorm, whether it's one call or live in-person meeting or something like that. As I said, I'm open to all opportunities. You just have to email me at askbrad@baconwrappedbusiness.
All right. Awesome. Well, that's very generous of you, Brad. And this whole episode has been generous of sharing your knowledge and your experience and lessons learned. There's a lot of actions to be taken out of this episode for our listeners. So listeners, be sure to go to marketingspeak.com for the show notes of this episode, a transcript of the episode, and a checklist of actions to take, where we've distilled some of the best action-taking advice from the episode into a checklist for you to download as a PDF. So that's at marketingspeak.com. We'll catch you on the next episode of Marketing Speak. This is your host, Stefan Spencer, signing off.
Thanks for listening to the Marketing Speak podcast. Your host has been Stefan Spencer, three-time author and leading expert on SEO and online marketing, whose client list boasts such brands as Zappos, Sony, and Chanel. Want to learn more about SEO, social media, or just generally how to build an online empire? Visit marketingspeak.com for an archive of past episodes, along with transcripts and show notes. In addition, a wealth of resources that include video-based training, screencasts, webinars, white papers, articles, and blog posts can be found on his SEO coaching site, scienceofseo.com. To reach Stefan, visit his personal website at stefanspencer.com or email him directly at stefan@stefanspencer.com. Until next time.